to Music A to Z. Got a quite an interesting show. Thanks for subscribing and thanks for listening. Now, I guess we should introduce ourselves. My name is Steve.
And I'm Doug.
We haven't quite launched our podcast yet, so we haven't got any feedback. I'm hoping this upcoming week, because I've already paid our producer to put it up.
But he is notoriously, I don't want to say unreliable, but maybe slow moving is a better term for it.
But dashingly good looking as well. So he's got that going for him. I also hear he's an amazing lover.
You know what? I haven't actually heard that from any of the women he's with, come to think of it. You know, I think it's just sort of his own claim.
You know,
and I don't know if he's the most, like, qualified or, like, well, no, he's not the most objective person to give that opinion of.
I don't know. I find him to be nothing but truthful and valiant, so,
I mean, actually, you know, the truth is that I think when he does have bad sexual episodes, he tells us.
Whether
we want to or not. So I guess, you know, it must go well more often than not.
That's fair. Let's move on to our podcast. So again, this is Music A to Z. And sorry, we can't quite get to feedback yet because we've got none yet. Except for, Doug, I find you to be incredibly knowledgeable. So bravo. That's my feedback to you.
Oh, well, thank you, Steven. And you are extremely good at looking things up on your phone.
Says the guy who brings in his laptop.
Well, I didn't today, actually.
Not today.
Because I was kind of rushing out the door, because I thought when you said 1 o'clock, you'd be picking me up at 1
I'm
o'clock.
I'm sorry, yeah.
And then I was like, and then after, like, around 1:10, I'm like, you know, maybe he just meant meet there at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, so. I was out and running errands. My apologies. But you know what? The important thing is we're here now.
I should have thought to ask instead of just assumed. Anyways.
We're both to blame. Anyways, we're on to our fourth episode, which means we're on to the letter D.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going for someone that that you already have, I won't say a relationship with, but I will say that that you've had a connection with through writing reviews.
Yes, he goes by, well, his name is Danny Peck, and he goes by the name Depp.
So he goes by Depp. From what I gather, Danny Peck is from Asheville, North Carolina, and has been making music since 1994 on his, first it was his parents' computer, I think he said, on his about side, which I don't know the sophistication of music software on a personal computer in 94.
At all.
We had a Compaq at that point? Was that 94? Because Daniel was still very, that was...
Oh, yeah, we had the Compaq Pesario.
Yeah, and yeah. I could not imagine editing music or even recording music. I think it did have a mic, an onboard mic, but
yeah,
I mean, the quality on that. So I'm very curious, actually, Mr. Peck, if you ever listen to this, I would be exceptionally curious to know what sort of software you used and what sort of hardware, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird thinking back 20 years ago, because that is 20 years ago.
That is 20 years ago now.
And thinking, like, what computers were then versus what they are now, and how much more, like, we could do with them and how much faster they are. It's kind of weird to think about, like, computers in the 90s.
Yeah.
And even then, actually, in the 90s, they were progressing so well. Like, between 94 and 99, huge jump, you know?
Massive. And I know some of you out there are saying, look, they were recording music digitally back at the time. But, I mean, that would be in a professional setting. This guy was basically saying, you know, I was doing it on a home computer. And he saw a whole bunch of options, you know, available for actually making music. And that, to me, is just, you know, astounding. It's just like, using the software at that time, I mean, nowadays, you can go and you can get GarageBand or whatever, and, you know, you can kind of tinker around with it. But, I mean, that it strikes me that it would take considerably more work at that time and to feel inspired and say, oh, you know, there's so much more I can do. Kind of like how, who was telling me, I think Nate was telling me that Deadmau5
yeah.
uses extremely sophisticated editing software for his music. And so much so that he has it free. Anyone can use it, but it's so sophisticated. Most people are just like, I don't even understand how to use this.
I wouldn't even... I'm perplexed by a lot of music software. I have trouble puttering around with GarageBand, which is supposedly like one of the most straightforward ones. I guess, I mean, I have no problem with like splicing samples together and making songs through that, but once I just have no idea how to like make something that's kind of original. It's not obvious to me. Even though it's a Mac, program and Mac stuff is really usually pretty straightforward. I find this to be one of the less straightforward programs.
Yeah. You know, and what struck me as kind of funny is that he says that from there, from that point on, he learned piano and guitar. So did he?
So it sounds like he was a digital artist first, mm-hmm. and then moved into actual acoustic instruments.
Yeah, and it kind of strikes me as weird. It's kind of like trying to like jump in and conduct an orchestra and then learn to play the violin. That's kind of what it sounds like to me. You know,
I suppose so.
Most of his bio page is almost him apologizing. He says, it's just like, you know, this is just me being honest. Sometimes I go up and I perform and it's not a work of art, but I can promise you though that I'm really trying from the heart and stuff like that. And you know what? You don't need to apologize to me, man. I mean, honestly, I don't think anyone with a rational head on their shoulders can expect the most marvelous performance ever every single time you go up. But if you go up and you're exposing yourself and you're being honest, I think that is connecting with the audience right there.
Yeah, I think, and I think ultimately that's all musicians can hope to do, is just to like, you know, put themselves out there and convey what they're feeling and thinking through their songs. That's you know, if you're doing that, I think that you're a good musician. And you know, that's something that not even like a lot of pop stars can really say, is that they're out there, they're entertaining, but are they really like burying themselves and exposing themselves in front of people in a legal way?
I think as soon as you start lip syncing, and this, just to be clear, this is in terms of performing in front of a live audience. As soon as you start lip syncing, I think you automatically start to lose some of the connection. Yeah. I understand in the purposes of a music video. I mean, there was Michael Stipe from R.E.M. He refused to lip sync, and he would sing every single time. Same with Springsteen. But Stipe then, when he found out Sinead O'Connor's Nothing Compares to You was lip-synced and she was able to convey that emotion, he said, you know what, just due to the logistics of filming a music video, lip-syncing's fine. So I will absolutely extend the grace to a music video. But if you're performing on stage to people who've paid to come and see you, you know what, and you can say, let's say Britney Spears or whatever, will put on, like, from a technical aspect, a perfect show. But if she's lip-syncing her stuff, then she's lost that heart and that's honesty.
Who actually lip syncs their shows anymore?
A lot of people still. I thought
that was like a Milli Vanilli thing, like 20 years ago.
Well, yeah, I mean that was at the time that was a big but now it almost seems to be standard. I know for a fact, because Jessica went to the Katy Perry show, she was pretending to play the flute. I think there's a video of that up as well.
Oh, that must be embarrassing.
Yeah, so she's playing the flute, and you're like, oh, hey, you know, she's... And all her supporters, look, she's musical. She can play flute, and granted, flute's a bloody hard instrument. I can only imagine if you are legitimately on stage and your heart's racing and you're winded, I can imagine that would be insanely hard. But then she, like, she doesn't pick up her flute in time, and the flute music comes through, and then she's like, oh, whoops. It's like, why are you even bothering then?
I remember an interview with Moby. Because, okay, but remember, you know, Top of the Pops?
Yeah.
I don't think the show's going on anymore, but it was going on for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And Moby found it to be the strangest show because you're not allowed to, like, actually perform your song. You don't play the song. You basically pretend to. And that's the way Top of the Pops has always been. And he's just found it really strange. He's like, so I'm going to go onto stage in a minute and pretend to play my own song. and he just was... So it just seemed very strange to him, and when he mentioned it like that, I'm like, that's very strange to me as well. I don't understand like why you would just go and pretend to play the studio recording of your hit song. But I mean, tons of acts did it. Even Nirvana did it.
Yeah, so, although they were throwing their instruments around and crap.
I guess maybe Nirvana's not the best illustration of that going well.
Danny Warhol's, I saw ages ago, a clip of them performing Top of the Pops, and at the time I had no idea. Yeah, I guess since we both saw Moby in concert, it would be especially strange, because, I mean, he's a very active performer.
Like, very personable, like, okay. Very interacts a lot with the audience.
Yeah, okay, okay. I'm gonna go play this instrument right now. Okay, I'm gonna run over and play this instrument. It must be very foreign to him to just have to fake it.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, we got into that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was basically just saying that, you know, in terms of performing, you know what, I would absolutely come out to see some of your performances, Depp. I guess BC is quite away from North Carolina. But, you know, if you're just saying, look, I'm just going to go up here and play the music and be open and honest with an audience, that is nothing to apologize about. I do find it interesting. I was listening to Ever Looming, I think it's called.
Yeah, this is the most recent one.
And I was hearing brass instruments in there. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think they were actual brass instruments and not synthesized. They sounded very, very real, like brass.
You know, it's been a while since because I reviewed that album on Sour Grapes Winery. He actually asked me to. And I did look a little bit into it. I think there are some real brass instruments in there. It seems like he was expanding his recording method and bringing in a lot more outside performers and stuff. I think there is some brass, and I know that he brings in an outside singer and stuff like that. It seemed to be one of his more ambitious recordings, and I think it paid off. I thought it was one of his stronger records.
I did enjoy it. Yeah, so I mean, he's got quite a few releases. I think it averages out to like one every 2 years or something like that.
I think more than that.
More than that?
I mean, because there's EPs and a few EPs and sometimes some years he releases more than one. It's actually kind of it's a pretty impressive album. On his webpage, it shows like what years they're from. Oh wait.
Yeah, and I was going to mention this as well, that he...
Well, did you look at that?
He just released it.
And, oh, you know, and I thought we were going to be recording this sooner, so I didn't think that we'd actually have a chance to listen to it beforehand. But we did.
Only 2 days, though. It was released on March the 20th. We're recording this 2 days after. So, sorry we haven't listened to your new album yet. I have it queued up in my email.
We'll move toward that, because I think that we sort of start from the beginning and work our way. But yeah, it's good to know that that's out now.
Now, anyway, you had said, though, he had asked you to review one of his albums. Can you explain how about that all came about?
Okay, well, essentially, what was it, 2011? The very first day, it was like January 1st, 2011, I think, he released his self-titled album, Depp, which is not his first album, but it's one that he self-titled because he felt that it was one of his more personal ones, and it sort of like conveyed his personality the most. I was sort of at my... Sour Grapes Winery was still relatively new, and I was trying to, you know, I found that I liked reviewing a lot more independent stuff because I could get actually like I could send it to the artists and they would actually see it and read it, and my feedback would go to them and they could give me feedback and show their, you know, and it was just a way of sort of making it so that I wasn't just writing like the latest. U2 album or whatever, and it's just out there in a collection of U2 album reviews. It was something that, you know, not every indie artist gets to have, is like somebody appreciating their work and enough to like write about it in a coherent manner, other than just like a tweet that says like, OMG, I love your album. You know, and not that I'm sure he appreciates those too.
Oh, absolutely.
But you know, something that he could also like reference, and he did actually. I sent him the review of his self-titled, and he really appreciated it. He actually quoted it on his webpage for quite a while, but it's since been updated.
Yeah, like did he just say, hey, here's a great review, or did he take like a specific quotation from your review?
He took a quotation from it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and then I think he linked it as well.
Did you get a lot of hits through that mount?
Well, I think that's how I found out that it was up there. Was Joel, our editor, was like, hey, did you know that you're being quoted on his page? Because I just got a bunch of links from it. And I'm like, oh, thanks, Joel. And so, yeah, I saw it. And it was kind of cool, actually. That was one of the things that made me really, like, that was one of the turning points where I'm like, yeah, I should really, like, try and connect a lot more with the independent artists. Because this is, I think that they appreciate it, and I appreciate it when they show how much they appreciate it.
Well, yeah, and basically, you know, you're helping each other. You are bringing an audience that reads your sites to Depp, and Depp then, in return, is bringing people who visit his page and his music to your stuff. I mean, you know, it's just reciprocal.
I also reviewed an album, it's not a Depp album, but it's Danny Peck and another guy, They collaborated on an album, and it's called The Nightlight. It's self-titled. And it's a little different, but it's interesting because you can kind of, like, hear what he contributes to it if you know his music well, and sort of what the other guy contributes. So it's really is kind of an interesting merging of the two artists' sounds, and it wound up being a pretty good release. I don't think they've ever released anything else since then. It was just the Nightlights and then the EP, and it was like a B-sides EP or something. And I reviewed that and sent it their way, and then Depp contacts me after he releases Ever Looming, and he's like, hey, yeah, you know, if you, I don't know if you remember me. I'm like, yeah. He's like, but you reviewed my album like a couple years ago, and I have this new one, and I'd really like to hear what you thought. And so if you review it, I will send you a free CD of it. And I'm like, yeah, why not? And then it took me a really long time to get around to reviewing it, because right around that time was when I was getting separated from Tina, and so it just sort of, my personal life was kind of falling apart, so I wasn't able to, my writing suffered as a result. And so it wasn't until much later that I reviewed it. So I never actually got my CD, and if I did, it must have been sent to Tina's place. So who knows if I'll ever.
But see, you did send him the article.
I did send him the article, and
did he get back to you about it?
Yeah, I think he liked it.
Okay.
So it's out there, and I found it strangely difficult to write, actually. I mean, probably again because I was out of creative sort of lull. It was really good to sort of kind of listen and delve into the album, and every time I do a review, I try my best to kind of research like what went into the album, which is sometimes kind of hard because there's not always a lot of information on it, but there was enough that I was able to put something together.
So how many of his albums have you listened to, do you think? Or how many of his releases, shall we say?
Almost all of them. I think there's a couple early ones that I haven't heard. Songs from a Toy Box or something like that. I don't think I've heard that. And Undo or something like that.
Oh, but you have them on your iPod?
No, I just realized. I was reaching for it. I'm like, that's not my laptop, so I can't look that up. Those, I think there's about two that I haven't listened to, and I don't necessarily know why, but I think it's probably because I already have so many of his songs on my iPod, and I think I tend to kind of, I don't know, his earlier releases, it's not that I don't like them, it's just that I don't like them as much, I guess. And also the amount of space on my iPod is now full.
Yeah, which is astounding to me. I still haven't reached that point. It's 120 gigs, right?
Yeah. And I'm calling a few other things, making some room.
I love that word, calling.
Calling,
I love
it. Yeah. But I have 101 Depp songs.
Wow, yeah. That's crazy, man.
So yeah, the first one is Urban Adaptation. I know that much. I got a few unreleased ones actually, because I bought Start Loving the Robots. He didn't release it on CD because at that point in time he's like, you know, I think CDs have kind of gone the way of the jackalope.
They never existed.
He's like, well, I think they've, you know, they had a good life in there, but I don't think that people are really buying them anymore, so I'm not going to produce them anymore. I'm going to release my album digitally, but here's something that you can get if you want to buy a physical copy of my album. I put this robot USB drive. And so,
oh, really?
Yeah, so I bought the USB drive, and it came with some unreleased stuff.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah. I thought it was really cool. It was very unique. I haven't seen it since. So the little robots there on the cover, that's the USB drive. It's like this big.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I've actually, you know what? I've never even thought of that before, but it makes so much sense. It's like, hey, if you want to get something like physical and tangible, let me give you a little robot.
Yeah.
You can plug it in. It has all the music. And it had unreleased stuff on it?
Yeah, it did.
That's cool.
And some of it was pretty good. Yeah. So, I mean, how much I like his music really does change from like album to album, because I feel like there was definitely this ambient phase that he was going through for a few years that didn't really strike my fancy. Within the Darkness, the Wellness prologues, it's not that they're bad, it's just that they're just still very, very slow moving and hard to get into. But I will say that actually the first track on both of them I like a lot. And then the rest of it I'm just kind of like, it's just...
I've noticed with his Doug's ambient noise. I've noticed with quite a few of the albums I've listened to now. I took a crash course this past week.
Yeah, it basically seems like there's a lot of stuff here, and I'm like, here, I'll send you the albums that I like the most, and you tell me what you think. And the thing, what's great about Depp is that all the albums are on his website for free. Yeah. So, like, if you're never going to go broke trying to catch up on his on his discography, you just might lose a lot of time because there's quite a few albums.
Well, what I've noticed with Bud's his albums is a few of them I listen to, they start off really strong, and then they kind of start to peter out near the end. But there was a couple exceptions that I really enjoyed. Ever Looming and Stop Loving the Robots?
Start loving the robots.
Don't stop loving them.
You better start loving those robots.
But, you know, I started off... Yeah, so Doug refers me to the website, and he's got a great setup. He's just like, you know, just sign up for my website. I'll send out the occasional newsletter, but and then he takes on this apologetic tone where he's just like, it's not a frequent thing. Only when I release new albums. That's the only time.
And
I'll
that's
send
the thing
emails.
Is, it's true. Is that every time I got an email from him, it's just that he's like, hey, here's my new album. Download it. I'm like, okay,
download, please, thank you. Sorry. Sorry.
I think. Well, I mean, the thing is that. I kind of know where he's coming from because having like scoured Bandcamp for as long as I have and signed up to as many like band newsletters as I have, reaches a point where I just like I see them and I just start deleting. It's like, oh, I can't read any more of these bloody band newsletters. And so I get it where he's probably had gone through that experience mm-hmm. and is like, I really don't want people to be annoyed at my newsletters. Mm-hmm. And so few and far between. And so yes, anyone who's listening. If you do sign up for Depp's newsletters, you won't get inundated with them. They do come sporadically, and when he has something to trade.
I thought honestly it was a fair deal because he said, you know, sign up for my thing, and then you download all my albums for free. Now he does have a donate button, yes. And when I visited the website, I said it was something like buy me a coffee or something, which is kind of it's an instantly reliable thing. It's like, oh, the dude wants some coffee. Now you said it said something different.
I think it may have said can you get me a sandwich or something like that.
I love it,
but yeah, but it basically sort of emphasizing sort of like I'm really just making this music and not to make it big, not to make a lot of money, but just because I like it.
And he does. I mean, he clearly has a passion for it. But his stuff is available on iTunes as well. Not all of it, but a good portion. And I was sampling.
And he does have a Bandcamp page as well.
Yeah. I was sampling through iTunes to listen to them, and I liked the sound of "Start Loving the Robots" quite a bit. So I said, you know what? I'm going to feel really bad if I just download a ton of his albums for free. I'll buy one of them. And I'll buy the one I like the most, and which was "Start Loving the Robots." From what I heard, so I bought that one and downloaded a bunch more. I feel a little guilty, but if he's cool with it, I'm cool with it.
I mean, the thing is, he does put them out there for free. Yeah. Actually, there was a brief period of time where he actually did decide to charge for his albums, mm-hmm. and then so he's like, "So yeah, there you go. There's how much they are." And it was literally within a few days where he put him back to free. He's like, I just can't. he's like, I just don't feel like it's right. I feel like my music should be out there to as many people as possible.
Which is fine.
And like, wow. I mean, that actually takes guts to put in that much work into something and just like give it away. You know, I almost feel like I've neglected to mention instructions for flying.
Go for it.
Yeah, because I feel like that must be a strong album because. That was the one I kind of stumbled upon on CD Baby. That was the introduction album. I stumbled upon it because they have that, if you buy three CDs, you get them each for $5 kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was one of the ones that was up for that deal. And so I was literally browsing through tons of albums. And when I'm browsing through albums that I have no idea what they are, and there's tons and tons of them, I go strictly on cover art. and then I sample through the music. And Instructions for Flying had a good enough cover art that I'm like, hey, all right, let's listen to that. And it appealed to me enough that I bought it. And I really liked it. And so I just thought I'd mention that because I feel like that's sort of where it all began. So it must have been a pretty strong start.
I kind of like mentioning touring and stuff. And I'm just looking at his page. The last time he went out to play was, according to your website, was... in your hometown in July of last year, and before that it was you had a looks like a bit of a mini tour in 2012. But these are all in your hometown. Okay, so I guess you don't get out that much.
I mean, I imagine it's pretty expensive to pack up all your gear
absolutely.
And head even across to another state.
Yeah, I would encourage you though to try touring at least once. Like just so you can do it, B to actually meet people because I will say that I would love to meet you. I love going to concerts and meeting the artists.
once you go over a border, it becomes a little more tricky.
It definitely does. So, I will say that. So I'll come down to Seattle.
Because we live in Vancouver, it's a few hours drive to Seattle. So if you go to Seattle, we'll come and see you.
Now, again, I know it's a huge undertaking. I know there's so much planning, and this is really just a side thing for you. But it's more of just an encouragement thing. I honestly think if you go out and you tour a bit, people will come to see you and will come.
I almost feel like to sort of test the waters in that area, maybe he should do like a Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah,
of like, hey, I'd like to go on tour, and that way, you know, he could raise some money for it. And if he doesn't raise the money for it, then maybe there's just not enough support for him to justify going on a tour.
That is a fantastic idea. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, do a Kickstarter. And you know what? If you start a Kickstarter, we'll plug it on this show. Absolutely. Why not say, hey, yeah, this dude wants to give a try at touring. You know, be really, really picky about your cities. Sure. But, you know, I do want to say, though, if it genuinely does not interest you, I'm not going to be critical about it, man.
Yeah, I mean, I know that Moby has sort of like, he's decided he doesn't want to tour very much. He says he doesn't want to say no, that he won't do it, but yeah. He says that he really kind of likes focusing on just writing music and sitting at home in his home studio, and he loves that so much that the notion of going to tour just doesn't appeal to him the same way it used to.
And that's fine. I don't want to guilt anyone for having that from
which is upsetting because I kind of want to see Moby again.
I do too. Yeah. He lives in New York though, so
actually I think he lives in LA now. I think he moved.
Oh, he moved.
Although he hasn't sold his New York apartment, so I read an article where he moved to LA. But I guess I can't say for sure. I haven't been stalking him.
Can you imagine a collaboration between Depp and Moby?
That would be interesting because they kind of have a similar, at least from what I gather. I guess I can't say for sure. Sort of method of constructing songs.
I think like, that Moby would be like he kind of struck gold with Play. You know, with all the licensing and getting the music out and stuff, even though he kind of regrets it now, it did cause him to be really, really big. If he didn't have that sort of success, maybe he would have just kind of petered out and would have now the same sort of, you know what I mean? Same sort of career that Depp sort of has, you know,
where he's just making music. Just making music in his apartment. Home and yeah. Maybe.
Just doing his thing, yeah. And it is kind of funny to me, though, that Moby now regrets because now he's like, oh, my songs from Play are everywhere now, and it's just like, ugh. So, yeah. Although I will say that I'm kind of glad because I really dig Moby. I don't know if I would have heard him otherwise. Who knows, right? But
yeah.
But this isn't about Moby, so
we'll save that for him.
Maybe we'll get to him.
There's a lot of M bands, so it's hard to say.
Well, let's talk about recommendations, I guess. What would you say are the high points for you?
All right, well, I have been thinking about this a little bit. There's Swiss off of the Wellness Prologue, the first song on the album, I mean. It's only four tracks, but it's a long four tracks. But Swiss is really interesting. It goes through a lot of... It's like it kind of goes through similar emotions the whole time, but there's something about, like, the how do I say? Like, this majesty to it, it's this almost as if you're surveying a huge landscape. So it's, I think it's pretty powerful. This music is pretty good. Start Loving the Robots. Let's see. The last track I like a lot. Who Knows Where We Go From Here? Like that one really, really struck gold for me. And there's a reprise of it on My Quiet Life, the EP. So it's Who Knows Revisited. And I like that almost as much. Like it's. I actually thought that was a nice touch to have that song on an album, and then have it a different version of it on the EP. It seemed to kind of like, I don't know. It was very satisfying. It was very. It was that air of familiarity, but also something new added to it. So those two songs, not necessarily back to back, but if you listen to that album and then the EP after, I think it's pretty. It's pretty good. Combo. On the I think on his self-titled, there's So Rocco Malo. I don't know what it is about that song, but it's very, very memorable to me. And I don't even know if it's my favorite song on that particular album, but it's the one I always kind of like remember off of it because it's kind of unique, and also the way it transitions from one track to the next, it's so really I like it. Off of Ever Looming, the second track, Last Known Surroundings, I think is terrific. Like, just one of his best pieces of music. It really starts off quiet, very a lot of like little, like little metallophone ding 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 dings, and then it just like swells up and gets this vocal portion, and it just becomes this really big epic finale. So those are my recommendations. Last Known Surroundings, that's one to hear for sure.
I was digging the Made in the Shade EP or LP. I'm not sure if it's... it was 50 minutes long. I'm going to call it an EP. Sorry. Made in the Shade. I was kind of digging it. It was remastered recently.
Yeah, he remastered almost all his albums, I think.
Oh.
Which seems to me to be a lot of work. I don't know. I don't know. Actually, I have no idea what... because I'm not very musically inclined. I don't know what it takes to remaster something.
Yeah. I know when Pogo started remastering his older stuff, he added way more elements.
Oh, yeah, he, like, almost rewrote them.
Yeah, basically.
Which seems like, yeah, like, a lot of work, but it almost feels like there are demons that he had to exercise. He's like, I'm not done with this song, I need to add more.
I think, though, that's his income now, because I think he's popular enough that he's actually got an income, so he's just going to keep plugging away at them.
Yeah.
You know, I did say that I bought Start Loving the Robots because at the time I was really, really digging it, but I'm actually now moving towards Ever Looming. When that brass started kicking in, it made me really take note. And I do love the piano and Start Loving the Robots quite a bit. I find it to be very, very emotionally played. Like, you know, sometimes where someone's like playing piano, it's just like, it's just there. But I don't know. I find piano to be such an interesting and versatile instrument. You can sometimes really hear a person's emotions through it, which, and I have no explanation how or why. But that being said, though, Ever Looming, I've been finding myself enjoying more and more. So if I were to give a single recommendation, I'd say, here, listen to Ever Looming, and then
just the whole album.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm some bands, I'll do tracks, but you know, there are quite a few bands where I'm just like, I like the experience of the album.
You know, that's true. Like, sometimes I can't even just like listen to I feel like I need to listen to the album.
That isn't always true.
And actually with Depp, I find like, especially some of his releases, the album is such an organic experience. Like, the tracks literally lead into one another. Like I said, with Toke Ra Modo Si Mo Do Fo, that one. Like, that one is that album, Depp, is just like a fluid experience from one track to the next. So
now, on the other hand, if we're talking about, I'll even say Radiohead, where there are definite immediate track recommendations.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be different. But I think Ever Looming organically works as an excellent, excellent album. But yeah, I mean, if you really dig it, go to Start Loving the Robots from there. I agree that second track is pretty killer.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. Anything else? I mean, we're going to send this to Mr. Peck. Peck?
Yeah, and that's... I imagine that we'll probably hear from him. Yeah. He'll probably appreciate it. I think, well, we should mention his new album in that... I got the impression from his website, actually, and by got the impression, he pretty much flat out said that it was going to be pretty different. Like, it's going to be a big departure from what he normally does, and I'm always curious to hear that. And I actually sent him a tweet to sort of encourage that, because I said, well, basically my tweet was that sort of adventurous spirit to try something new is what creates great albums like Kid A and Acton Baby.
Mm-hmm.
Because Kid A was shockingly different from what anyone was expecting out of Radiohead,
and a lot of fans after got pissy about it
after OK Computer, because OK Computer, like, people like hailed it as like, and then they're like, this band's gonna be the next U2, the next big thing, and Kid A is, you know, it's almost more brilliant in retrospect. I mean, at the time it was pretty well critically praised.
It was critically praised, but they did lose fans.
There was some backlash.
I remember the that Amazon review, Radiohead farts on a keyboard and calls it music, and that really riled you up. You got kind of pissed about that. It's like, you do not know farting on a keyboard and calling it music until you hear dubstep.
Or, you know, I kept thinking, what was it, Hollaback Girl? Where it literally felt like it was that, I hate that Gwen Stefani song so much. It was such a big hit, and I just got so mad every time I played. Because it just, like, there was nothing put to it. It was just, like, clapping and, oh, B-A-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N- asleep on the keyboard. And they're like, yeah, it'll do. I mean,
it'll do.
She's Gwen Stefani. She's going to sell a million records anyway. So, and it did. And, sorry. I'm getting riled up again. 10 years later, I haven't gotten over it.
And lots of fans were saying, Kid A, boo.
Yeah, so I'm really curious to hear the next album. Yeah. What's it called?
I've got it queued up here. And as soon as I got the email, I said I should probably download this in time for the podcast, but I just didn't have the time.
Yeah, sorry, Deb. It's only been a couple days.
I like the cover art, too. Mm-hmm. It all comes down to this, is what it's called. with some robot hands looking at a floating island in space.
You know what that, I see that, what does that remind me of? But it really, like, that really reminds me of something.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lovely cover art, good job. I mean, yeah. I don't know who designs your cover art.
It's actually, now that, granted, I haven't seen most of his releases, I don't think, but it strikes me as quite different than
his For some reason, it makes me think of Air, that cover art.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why, because I can't think of any specific Air album that has anything that looks like that, but it made me think of Air.
Hmm. That's,
who are also great.
Yeah, this,
and we'll, no, maybe we'll cover them on this eventually. When we get back to A. Yeah, we're looking forward to your next album. Mm-hmm. People can download it probably for free on his website.
The website is dep.fm.
Yep.
Dep.fm. Yeah, be careful looking it up on Google. Try like Dep Music, Dep Musician. He can be a bit tricky to find on Google.
I imagine there's a lot of pictures of Johnny Depp that appear.
Yeah, or actually, it's not the worst. The worst was the music. Trying to find them on Google.
The music.
What were you guys thinking?
Oh, you can't even find them. Like, I look up the music on Amazon. I'm trying to buy their album. I'm like, damn it. Like, what was the name of the album again? I have to think of that.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
Yeah. But yeah, Depp's not too hard to find.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess unless you have anything else you want to add.
I think that's it.
Remember, if you have any feedback, we will love to get to it once this thing goes live, which I'm hoping it will be next week. And feel free to get in touch with us at admin@nshgfilms.com. Music A to Z podcast is hosted by Stephen and Doug Ferguson and is produced by me, Stephen Ferguson. You should check out our other works at nshgfilms.com, DougJCFerguson.com, and StephenGCFerguson.ca.